Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of all things culturally considered. I'm David LaTulipe, and we are filled to the brim on today's show with vocal music that spans the centuries. Cabaret legend Wesla Whitfield is visiting our studios today with KALW stalwart Mike Greensill, heard almost every week here on KALW for Sedge Thompson's West Coast Live. This dynamic duo has a show currently at the Raz Room. We'll talk about that. It's a very busy weekend ahead on the vocal scene. Ryan Connolly of the Resound Ensemble will talk about that ensemble's concerts this coming weekend with a member of the ensemble, Charu Janeja, in tow. The West Coast debut of Les Sirènes is also this weekend. Sirènes is Michael Sponseller on harpsichord, cellist Kara Swenson, and sopranos Kristen Watson and Catherine Mueller. And they'll be performing music of Handel and Monteverdi, among others. Catherine Mueller's here to share some of that music. Tenor Brian Jade is one of the two Cavaradossis in the San Francisco Opera's production of Tosca, currently underway, and I'll talk to him about that role. Peter Robinson comes by later in the hour to update us on some reviews, some picks and pans, perhaps. So we'll spend some time with Peter before our hour is over together. Starting off with Ryan Connolly and Charu Janeja in the Resound Ensemble, whose performances happen this weekend. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Charu.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Resound Ensemble itself. I know that it's a vocal group.
Right. The group is about 40 singers. This is our second season. Our first season, it started as a vision. I was working as a church musician, and one of my singers and I were talking about our desire to do concert music and kind of move away from doing just sacred church music and the sort of the weekly grind that can be being a church musician. And we started kind of putting together the idea of an amateur group of people that just really love singing a cappella music, anything between unison, 8+ parts, that would capitalize on and perform some of the a cappella music we have genres that we kind of do a little bit of everything. We'll do some pop things and we'll do some classical things and to kind of mix everything up, trying to tease out certain themes and things that bring a sort of relevance to the juxtaposition of different pieces that we try to make something that maybe wouldn't be there if it would be a single genre type concert. So
sure, and in using the personnel that you have, and I imagine it's a challenge at times. You have a degree in vocal music education, but I also noticed that you have a degree in architecture from the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
So you're kind of sculpting, in a way, these musical ensembles, and I'm sure that degree came in handy for,
yeah,
for moving forward in the music scene.
Yeah, well, it tends to be, I tend to have some architectural metaphors that will come out during rehearsal that, you know, structure of things or how things are put together that I think at this point are sort of automatic, but I'm sure that Char can comment that my metaphors tend toward the architectural probably more than not. So I have a pretty unusual resume, to say the least.
Char, you're singing and you're also on the board of the ensemble.
Yes, that's correct. I felt so lucky to find out about Resound that I wanted to help out in any way I could. And so the board is actually, we're pretty much a working board. We have no staff other than a little bit of Ryan's time. So everything you see that takes place in terms of the production of a concert other than the musical portion gets done by the board. So that's everything from marketing to fundraising to recruiting to the event logistics themselves.
Well, let's hear a little bit of music, then we'll talk some more. What are we going to hear, Ryan, in this first excerpt?
The first piece is called You Are the New Day. It's actually originally done by the King Singers, and it's something that we're doing in our first set for our concerts this weekend.
The Resound Ensemble in rehearsal under the direction of Ryan Connolly here on Open Air.
You are the new day.
You Are the New Day, a composition by John David. We heard a rehearsal performance of that work by the Resound Ensemble. It's a work that you can hear tomorrow and Saturday at St. Aidan's Episcopal Church in San Francisco. Information at resoundensemble.org. Ryan Connolly joins me in studio along with, Charo Junaja.
Correct.
Go,
that's perfect.
All right, got it. Some lovely sounds going on there.
Thank you.
Tell us what else is on that particular program this weekend.
This program, we're doing a piece by Norman Delajoy called A Jubilant Song to open the program. Another track that we'll hear a little bit later is called The Pasture by Z. Randall Stroop. We're doing a piece by Raminch, a piece by Samuel Barber.
What's the Barber piece?
The Barber piece is called The Coolin. It's from the set called The Reincarnations. Well, we're doing an arrangement of a Kings of Leon song. We're doing a piece called Past Life Melodies, which incorporates some harmonic overtone singing. A couple other things, a piece by Aaron J. Kernis called Dorma Adore, which has some Portuguese nonsense syllables. It's a lullaby. It's a pretty wide range of repertoire.
Very nice. And Charo, tell me a little bit about what it's like to sing in an ensemble like this, as opposed to some other ensembles you may have been associated with in the vocal front.
Sure. I mean, there are so many wonderful and talented choral groups in the Bay Area. But when I was starting to look for a group to join, what appealed to me about Resound was its diverse repertoire of music. As Ryan kind of gave an example of what we're singing, it's everything from world folk music to classical to a couple of pop songs. And I just really appreciate that we get to sing all these beautiful, challenging, interesting pieces from more than one century and more than one country.
Very nice. So we are going to hear one more excerpt, and I just want to thank you, first of all, for taking a little bit of time today with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. So this is the Resound Ensemble. Information about the concerts this weekend at resoundensemble.org. The concerts, once again, are at St. Aidan's Episcopal Church here in San Francisco, tomorrow and Saturday, 8 o'clock. And let's see, what are we going to hear next?
This piece is called The Pasture, and it's by a living composer, Z. Randall Stroop.
Music performed by the Resound Ensemble on KALW.
I shan't be long.
The Pasture, of work by Z. Randall Stroop, performed by the Resound Ensemble. Performing in concert tomorrow and Saturday at St. Aidan's Episcopal Church in San Francisco. Information at resoundensemble.org. Good afternoon once again. I'm David Latulip for Open Air. Still to come, Mike Greensill, Wesla Whitfield. We'll also be talking with Peter Robinson about some upcoming events here in the city. Plus, Brian Jade of the San Francisco Opera will talk about his role as Cavaradossi in the San Francisco Opera production of Tosca. But next, we're going to back up a few years to the time of Monteverdi and Handel with my next guest from Les Sirènes. Catherine Mueller joins us now in studio. Catherine, welcome to KLW.
Thanks for having me.
So Les Sirènes is making their West Coast debut this weekend.
That's correct.
Tell me a little bit about the ensemble, how it was formed, and where you've been performing.
Yeah, well, the ensemble is based in Boston, and it was formed by Kristen Watson and me. We are the two sopranos in the group. Kristen and I have known each other for over 10 years. We met singing with the Handel and Haydn Society in Boston, and we decided to form this group 3 years ago to explore the wealth of Baroque music out there for two soprano voices, with sort of the idea that we would be dueling sopranos, doing some of the most virtuosic music of the period.
That is some really florid stuff, too. We're talking 16th century Italian?
17th century. This particular program is a balance of Monteverdi and Handel. I think they're interesting selections because Monteverdi was one of the promoters of this new style of the Baroque at the turn of the 17th century, and then Handel is later in the Baroque is one of the composers who brought it to its greatest heights, before the changeover to the classical period.
Well, you're no stranger to this repertoire at all, having soloed with the American Bach soloists as well as the Washington Bach Consort and Santa Fe Pro Musica.
Yes.
And you've sung with the New Mexico Symphony as well.
I have. Yes, and although both Kristen and I are trained with sort of a general classical training, our specialty is Baroque performance, and it's very fun to be able to do it in such an intimate chamber setting here with Michael and Cora, who are harpsichordist and cellist.
Well, you're actually in several different venues, so is it a challenge to adapt, or are they all similar in terms of what you expect for an acoustic? It looks like it's all happening in churches, so you have that going for it.
That is a challenge of all the concerts that we do, is you're generally in a different venue every night. It's often a place you've never been before, and you usually have about a two-hour warm-up period when you get there to do a sound check and figure out where you need to stand and what you need to do and who needs to sing or play louder to balance. And it's but it's fun. It keeps you on your toes.
Well, at least this time of year on this coast, the harpsichordist doesn't have to worry so much about going crazy with the tunings.
That's
in different
true.
Venues. That's
yes.
for sure.
We were in Tucson a couple weeks ago, and Cora's cello, which is a Baroque cello with gut strings, didn't like the Tucson dryness very much. So it's a challenge that instrumentalists have to deal with when they play period instruments.
So who are you working with on this this concert? I know you mentioned another soprano. Harpsichord is involved. Cora Swenson, cello.
Yes, that is our ensemble, and we enjoy touring together.
Mm-hmm. Where else have you performed?
We performed in Phoenix and Tucson just a couple weeks ago. And last month, we actually were finalists in Early Music America's Baroque Performance Competition. This was a national competition to promote up-and-coming, emerging Baroque ensembles. And we were one of six finalist groups and performed on the finals concert in New York City.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
you. That must have been exciting.
Yes.
Where was the performance there?
It was at Corpus Christi Church in Manhattan, which is near Columbia on the Upper West Side. And actually, a couple of Bay Area groups were also in the finals. So it was a great group of musicians to be a part of that night.
Tell me a little bit about the music of Monteverdi that you selected for this concert.
Well, I think that the reason we chose to do Monteverdi and Handel together on this concert is that they both clearly loved writing for the soprano voice. They wrote beautiful, virtuosic, florid lines and also gorgeous, long spun lines with suspensions that, you know, clash and layer onto each other and sort of have this tension and release. And they both were wonderful musical dramatists. They both really took their texts and set them in a way that would portray the texts in the music. And
I remember distinctly in my first undergraduate music history course, the teacher was on the cynical side and said, oh, you people aren't going to like this anyway, but we've got to teach it. And it was Monteverdi's L'Orfeo, and I just was in love with that sound. When I first heard it, it was like, wow, I had never discovered the music of Monteverdi, and I was just floored by it.
It's really incredible and amazing that he was writing this music over 400 years ago, and it's still so effective, I think.
Well, we're going to hear some Handel. It's going to sound familiar to people, but we're going to hear it in a different language. Tell us what we're going to hear from you.
Yeah, this is a wonderful chamber duet that Handel wrote in the early 1740s when he was living in London, and it was just months before he began to write Messiah, which, of course, is his most famous work. Baroque composers, and Handel was no exception, were great at borrowing from themselves and from others. And so he wrote this chamber duet, which is for two sopranos and continuo, which Michael and Cora will be realizing the continuo part. And it is an Italian love duet saying, I won't trust you, blind love and cruel beauty. And I think that your listeners will recognize a couple of tunes because Handel later on, when he was composing Messiah, must have thought, oh, there was that great tune from that duet. I should use it in the chorus. And you'll recognize a couple of tunes in this duet.
Indeed. Here's the music of Handel, sung by Catherine Mueller and your fellow soprano?
Kristen Watson.
Kristen Watson. Music of George Frederick Handel on KALW and Open Air.
Thank you.
Ravi to Catherine Mueller, soprano, and Kristen Watson. And thanks to Early Music America for that recording from the New York competition that those sopranos were involved in. It was music of Handel, No di voi non vo fidarmi, some of which was self-borrowed by Handel for Unto Us a Child is Born, as you probably heard at the very beginning. He used some of that same rich material for his Handel's Messiah. Information about this upcoming concert, the West Coast debut of Les Sirènes, who is those two lovely sopranos, Catherine Mueller, Kristen Watson, Michael Sponseller, harpsichord, and Cora Swenson on cello. Information for their concert of music of Handel, Monteverdi, and some other folks like Frescobaldi is information at sfems.org. That's sfems.org. Good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe. Still to come here on Open Air, a chat with Wesley Whitfield and Mike Greensill, who have a Raz Room performances going on this week, and with Peter Robinson, who will update us on some cultural affairs. But next, I'm very pleased to welcome to the KLW studios someone who's made his San Francisco opera debut back in 2010 in La Fanciulla del West. He's an alumnus of the 2009 Marilla Opera Program and currently a third-year Adler Fellow, recently making debuts with the Minnesota Opera as Pinkerton and with the Santa Fe Opera as Cavaradossi, a role that he will be performing with the San Francisco Opera this coming week. Opposite Patricia Resett, along with the rest of a stellar cast. Brian Jade, welcome to KLW.
Thanks for having me, David.
Sure. Boy, this sounds like an exciting production, singing with Patricia on this.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. We're all having a lot of fun.
It's part of an alternating cast, right? So you have certain dates of the calendar?
Absolutely, yeah. They're back-to-back performances for the most part between the casts. Angela Giorgio has her cast with Massimo Giordano, and they open tonight. And tomorrow I open.
Very nice. How are rehearsals going?
They went really well so far. I think we're all set now. We had our final dress rehearsal yesterday afternoon, and it was a lot of fun. We're ready to go.
Tell me a little bit about this production. Is it a traditional production?
Indeed.
How is it set?
Yeah, this set is based on an old set, right? It's mm-hmm. based on the original set of Tosca from when San Francisco Opera did it back in, I forget, 1923? Yeah, sometime
wow.
around then. Anyway, it's traditionally done, and it's based on all the principles of what Tosca should be like. Nothing new and fandangle about it. It's pretty fun.
And Nicola Luisotti is conducting?
He's awesome at it, yes. This is his forte.
And you've worked with him through the Adler program or through the...
The Adler program has allowed me to work on the main stage throughout the last 3 years. And so almost all the productions I've done, I'd say half of them have been with Nicola. And yeah, we're good friends.
Tell me a little bit about, and our audience, for those who might not be familiar, about the Adler program itself.
Well, because I was part of the Marilla Opera program, which is a summer training program for young artists, which is, I did that in 2009, I was able to become an Adler Fellow. They choose, you know, 4 or 5 people per year from the Marilla group, which is about 30. And we train for what normally would be 2 years in the program throughout the Adler program. And basically what happens is I was asked to stay for a third year, and I was given an opportunity to perform Cavaradossi in the San Francisco Opera. Can't be much better than that.
But yes, and your performances with Patricia Resett will be on the 16th, the 20th, 24th, 27th, 29th, and then December 2nd, sfopera.com for more information on that. Now, let's get people on board with Tosca who may not be familiar. In a nutshell, it was first performed in Rome back in 1900. The plot is such an amazing mix of politics, mm-hmm. lust, sacrifice, murder, you name it. It's opera at its grandest. Tosca, a famous diva in love with you, Cavaradossi, a painter, and you're harboring a political refugee. Tell us more what happens in this opera.
Well, it's such a cool opera. I can't think of many operas where everybody dies like this. I mean, all three of us get to, you know, pass away in this one. So basically, long short of it, Cavaradossi is in Rome, which is a highly dangerous area for someone like him who is a revolutionary. And he's there because he's in love with Tosca and he's moved there to be with her, even though it's very dangerous. Long story short, he is painting, and one of his old revolutionary friends, Angelotti, comes in, having escaped from the Castel Sant'Angelo. And because of that, the villain in the story, Scarpia, is chasing him. and I help him hide in my villa. And, you know, in the midst of all this, there's a romantic duet with Tosca where I'm trying to get rid of her from the church because I've just, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to hide this guy. And meanwhile, I'm trying to tell her I love her, and she has to hear it because she's this, you know, self-serving diva who needs to know that she's loved every 2 seconds. And it's really fun and scary at the same time. And, of course, Scarpia comes in, and that's really, really scary, played by Mark Delevan, who I don't know if I can find a scarier Scarpia. And we get to go head-to-head in the second act when they accuse me of harboring this refugee. And so, basically, I get convicted and sentenced to death. And they take me to the top of the Castel Sant'Angelo. And in the midst of all this, Scarpia makes a deal with Tosca and says, you know, if you are romantically entangled with me, if you sleep with me, if you sleep with me, I'll not kill him. I'll allow him to have a fake death, and we'll pretend to shoot him, and you guys can run away afterwards, but only if you give yourself to me. And she thinks it's kind of true, but we all kind of sort of have our doubts about Scarpia. She ends up killing him instead of sleeping with him after he signs my release form. And then they take me and they try and shoot me and they succeed. And then she kills herself. And it's really fun.
as a student of opera and an opera singer, you must know a little bit about the intriguing story of the play that was bought by eventually by Puccini's publisher. Originally, the rights to the play were purchased by a composer by the name of Alberto Franchetti. Mm-hmm. And apparently Puccini really wanted to set this, and his publisher Ricordi convinced this guy's publisher, oh, it's a horrible story, no one will ever want it. So we're grateful to that Ricordi for making that little deal.
It's really a perfect story, happening within one day.
Yeah.
It's really,
that's right. Yeah.
It's amazing. And the actual, there's actually like some true historic events that took place that were in the play that happened not at the exact same time as in this day, but the playwright used it on purpose to kind of influence that big moment that happens, the Vittoria in the second act. Mm. Where, well, I
speaking
have
of big moments, you have
quite a few.
Yeah, quite a few big moments. But I think most familiar to people will be Luce van le Stelle. Mm. Tell me, set up this aria for you, and we'll play an excerpt from it.
Yeah, this is the time where he's basically he's supposed to be dying any minute, and he knows it, and he's looking out and he sees these stars and he remembers these many times that, you know, at his villa he'd be waiting and Tosca would come, and he's picturing all this in the very beginning of it, and he's saying, wow, it's like the stars are shining, and this is exactly just like when she would come through the gate and we'd fall into each other's arms. And then he realizes that's never going to happen again, and it becomes this tragic aria of depression and proclaiming of his one true love throughout his life.
Here is tenor Brian Jade singing that with a previous performance of the San Francisco Opera. tenor Brian Jade performing E Luce Van Le Stelle from Puccini's Tosca, San Francisco Opera production, sfopera.com. He'll be performing with an alternating cast. Brian will be singing with Patricia Rossette on the 16th, 20th, 24th, 27th, 29th, and December 2nd. The alternating cast is Massimo Giordano, who is making his San Francisco Opera debut, and he'll be performing with Angela Giorgio. So quite a cast whichever night you decide to go see Tosca, but do go see it. sfopera.com. Also, more information about Brian's work and excerpts of his singing at brianjade.com. That's spelled Brian, JAGDE.com. Well, welcoming some cabaret royalty here in our studios today. Switching gears a little bit.
Darn, I forgot my tiara.
Oh, in radio, you know, we see the tiara. What are you talking about? It's absolutely brilliant. Wesla Whitfield, I think this is the first time we've had a landmark actually moved into the studio, as you've been called an indoor landmark.
It's kind of strange, you know.
we can either blame or thank the San Francisco Chronicle for that review. Now, you've really breathed some wonderful life into songs from the Great American Songbook, and we're just lucky to have you. The show that you're doing up at the Raz Room is called Lucky to Be Me, and
yes.
I think we're lucky to have you.
Okay. What can I say? You're very kind.
Yeah, we're actually doing a retrospective of all our recordings. That's the excuse.
So, all right.
How many do we have? 21?
21.
21.
We've been very lucky. That's my point.
Yeah, and you've managed to stay together as a couple that long, too, which is pretty amazing.
That was actually easier.
We're both our favorite spouses, and we're both married the third time, so it's obviously
all right.
Took us a long time to get there, but we finally found the right equation
going there, sure. Well, the performance at the Raz Room is not your first time at the Raz Room by any means. You're stalwarts there. And, Mike, we've heard you almost every week here on KLW as Sedge Thompson's sidekick.
Yes, I plead guilty.
Ed McMahon to his Johnny.
Actually, I wrote a funny story about that, which is sort of half name-dropping. Tony Bennett was on the show once, and I was introduced to him in the green room. And he said, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm the sort of piano player and sidekick on the show. I said, sort of like the poor man's Paul Schaefer on David Letterman. And he said, oh, I hope you're better than that. And that endeared him to me forever.
Well, I want to hear some music and then we'll talk some more. Here's Wesla Whitfield with Mike Greensill.
Alone and awake, I've looked at the stars, the same that smiled on you. And time and again, I've thought all the things that you were thinking too. I have dreamed that your arms are a joy you'll be. I have dreamed every word you'll whisper when you're close to me. In the glow of evening, I have dreamed, and in
I Have Dreamed, a wonderful tune from the Wesley Whitfield, Mike Greensill album called In My Life, available on High Note. It's one of 21 CD collaborations you guys have been doing together. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Actually, there's one that wasn't on CD. Our very first album was called, what was it called? Just for a Thrill. And that was actually just on LP. So, which I guess ages us as well.
Tell us a little bit more about the program that you put together for the Razorum this time around.
Well, it's almost all songs from our many recordings, and they're little stories that go along with them because, you know, after this many years, you got some stories, and some of them you can tell, and so we have a good time there. But mostly it's about lucky to be me, because I really am lucky to be me. Had a great life. Tomorrow's our 26th wedding anniversary.
Which someone's got to keep track of that.
Us both.
You're the one that's supposed to keep track of that, I think.
One of them.
I just celebrated 25 of unmarriable bliss, I guess, with my partner Ron. Well, we were married but annulled.
But annulled, God, yes.
So you're
the ex. It's all going to change.
It really is going to, I think.
Funny connection with the opera is last night at the show at the Razorum, our dear friend, who's also on one of our albums, Living on Love, Bill Klingelhofer, who's the principal French horn of the opera orchestra, who said he was immersed in Puccini, but he came out to hear some Rodgers and Hart. But it's funny, we were talking last night that with all these people we're doing, we realized there was no Johnny Mercer last night, and that was a big... There was no Irving Berlin.
Shameful. No, there's Irving Berlin.
Oh, there's Irving Berlin.
That'll be next year's show at the Razorum.
Right.
Now, Wesley, what I've really enjoyed, I've listened to some of your CDs here, is the way you've taken what many people would consider a familiar song and perhaps altered the tempo a little bit, maybe stretched things out a little bit or spent a little bit more time on a melody than other performances may have. Is that something you're consciously thinking of going in one direction rather than another?
When we're first arranging it, yes, we do think of it very consciously and have some heated discussions about it. But these are songs that people kind of, it's elevator music, and so they don't notice sometimes what incredible lyrics come with it, and that's what I like to bring out, the story. Mm-hmm. And even though these songs are quite old, they speak to the human condition today. They really do.
Right.
People
right.
fall in love, fall out of love, you know, all of that.
Sure. Now, when a couple weeks back, when we had a live radio program commemorating the life of Alan Farley, we concluded the broadcast with a recording of your singing In My Life.
Mm-hmm.
Which just everyone was weeping. It was just such a beautiful performance, and it just hit the moments really, really well. And everyone here at KLW is thrilled that you folks have agreed to join us on Monday evening.
Oh, we're very honored.
At the Green Room for folks that are needing further reinforcement this coming Monday, the 19th, in the Green Room from 5 to 8. We'll have a variety of music, including a string quartet. Sarah Cahill will be performing. I'll be bringing my flute out a little bit. I think Eric Wayne's going to bring his trumpet. So some wonderful music, and you folks are going to be a part of this special program, singing a special tune. Hopefully bringing a little bit of Noel Coward to the equation, too.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
We have to do that, yeah.
Information about responding to Monday's celebration of Alan Farley is available at our website, kalw.org. And your performance at the Razroom can be detailed at therazroom.com. For those unfamiliar with the Razroom, it's two R's, right?
Two yes. Z's.
Two yes. R's, two Z's. The Razroom. Ferocious. Therazroom.com. Well, thanks for taking a little bit of time with us today.
It's
and we
pleasure.
So look forward
Our pleasure.
To working with you on Monday. Tell us what we're going to hear as you make your way.
This is a wonderful recording. This is one of my favorite recording, and this is my favorite track on it.
Mike Greensill and Wesley Whitfield here on Open Air.
This moment, this minute, and each second in it will leave a glow upon the sky. And as time goes by, it will never die.
Wesla Whitfield, vocals, with Mike Greensill at the piano, Michael Moore, bass, Colin Bailey on drums. That's from a CD called My Shining Hour, a Harold Arlen songbook, and that tune, My Shining Hour. You can hear Mike and Wesla at the Raz Room in performances coming up. Information at therazroom.com. Remaining performances are tonight at 7 o'clock, Sunday the 18th at, actually tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 5, and Tuesday and Wednesday at 8 up at the Raz Room, therazroom.com, the R-R-A-Z-Z, room.com. And to round things out for this week's Open Air, I'm pleased to welcome once again Peter Robinson back to our microphones. Hello, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here.
What you been up to?
Well, I've been up to everything, but I was just smiling when Mike Greenfield spoke about the fact they hadn't recorded a Johnny Mercer song. And one line I've always enjoyed from Mercer, it's the second line of Standing on the Corner Watching All the Girls Go By.
Okay, what is it?
And the line is, "You can't go to jail for what you're thinking." So anyway, I'm thinking good thoughts today, so I'm not going to jail. And
right,
I've been to a couple of really worthwhile movies, each of a different genre. And, of course, the first is the 50th anniversary of the bomb movie Skyfall, which is playing around town, both in Marin, here and in the city and in the East Bay. And I think this is Judi Dench at her best. She plays...
That's saying a lot. Boy, she's done so much.
She has indeed, yeah. And she really is a domineering, almost dominatrix type M.
Okay.
Who keeps the busy Daniel Craig, the James Bond character, in place. But there are some other outstanding performances, including Javier Bardem, who in this case is the villain. And as what we will learn is the new M, Ralph Fiennes. So you actually have got a classic cast here.
Interesting. I hadn't, thanks for sharing that. I knew that movie was coming out, but I didn't know the supporting characters there. Great.
Yeah, the supporting characters are good. And once again, arrive at the beginning, because it does open with a classic Bond chase. This time we're in Istanbul. We're chasing along on top of trains as they race towards tunnels. And his, I'm going to say sidekick, but she's almost a sidekick, not quite in bed. This is Eve, the other character. Naomi Harris is chasing in a Jeep with a telescopic rifle. And, of course, the big question is, will Bond get shot by mistake? So we...
So you're going to leave us at least with a little bit of a cliffhanger there. Now, two things I do remember about hearing about this movie, a couple of which are controversial, actually, is, not controversial is the fact that Adele does the theme song. So I hear that's a wonderful song that's incorporated. You always have a fascinating Bond song to add to the canon. And the other thing is that instead of a martini, he has a Heineken. And
yes,
I'm shocked by that. Shocked! Or maybe he has a martini as well. I would
certainly
do
that. Yeah, well, I think product placement is the name of movies nowadays. You pay the producer, you pay the film company, but in the end, you find the product placement, and Heineken has slipped in. Two other things, I think, for people who know London, you know, as a newspaper reporter, you know, I covered the city, I know the beat, I know the streets. There are some wonderful visuals of London, not only from sky level with the classic Big Ben, the Houses of Parliament, but from subterranean London, because part of it is set on the underground in the Tube, and then in other old-time, in fact, World War II hideouts, of which one was used by Churchill. So visually, Sam Mendes, the director, has produced a great visual movie that will simply get your attention from the beginning. And I think historically, it is the 50th anniversary of the first James Bond, that there are moments of nostalgia, there are moments of sentimentality in this, but also I think it's a topical movie because part of it deals with cyber terrorism. And today we live in that age where a computer in Tampa can drop a drone in the middle of Afghanistan and whoosh, but we can also knock out computers, hackers, our kings. And I think in this case that they've blended tradition with contemporary, including the high-tech stuff. The first three quarters of the movie I really enjoyed. The last 15 minutes it's everyone's judgment, but it could have been Shootout at the OK Corral. We suddenly moved back into the world of the Western. We're actually up in Scotland. You'll have to find out why, but you've got to remember that one of the early Bonds, Sean Connery, was in fact Scottish, and they had to switch the story at one point. So you're in for a good movie. It's got a sense of humour, it's got tongue-in-cheek, and it's got irony.
You mentioned another movie that you saw.
Yes, and my second one, I found a really, really fine movie. I almost got it at the top of my list for the year. It is Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's gotten a lot of press, and boy, I'm so looking forward to it. Tell us your impression.
I think really good. It focuses very much on the passing of the anti-slave emancipation. But you get a sense of how the Civil War was playing in the background. There are not a lot of battleground scenes, so we're not roaming through the fields at Gettysburg.
Carnage, sure.
But we are inside the Congress of the time. And in terms of deal-making, how you bring people across from one political party to the other to vote for a really significant piece of legislation, I think in some ways mirrors the times in which we are living. So you have this key issue dividing the country. You've got a very determined Lincoln. And I think Day-Lewis, not only in the speech patterns, but also in the gait. You know, Lincoln, this tall character with a slightly awkward walk, he manages just through body language to bring you into that political moment. And I don't mind admitting, I got very emotional during it. And I think that's a great mark of filmmaking when you're sitting there in a theatre. And I'd recommend seeing it on the big screen. This, I think, benefits from the whole sense of being there. You are in the Congress, you're watching the votes being counted, you're seeing how they're being acquired. And as Lincoln's wife, Sally Ann Field, also brings in a rich production. So my tips for this week, two great movies, different contexts, different stories. Skyfall, for those who like a thriller, and in the case of Lincoln, people like a political drama. And just a quick word about audio books.
Just let me back up one moment about Lincoln. If you listen to tonight's rebroadcast of Fresh Air tonight at 6, Tony Kushner's on. So he talks all about the creation of the screenplay and based on the Doris Kearns Goodwin.
And Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, The Team of Rivals, I think is well worth reading. She herself was just delighted with the way the film was made, the settings, the period pieces, the decor inside the White House, and that sense and spirit of place.
I'm afraid we've got to wrap things up. What else did you have for us, Peter?
Just two brief tips. If you're listening to audio books, Ike's Bluff by Evan Thomas, the story of the Eisenhower actual presidency, not covering the war years when he was Supreme Allied Commander, but taking us into his presidency. If you're going on a trip over Thanksgiving and you want to slip a CD in to listen to, the book to listen to is Ike's Bluff, General Eisenhower's Cold War Years.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Peter Robinson. We'll hear from you in another couple of weeks. Actually, we're going to go out with a little bit of music of Mike and Weslow once again as we say goodbye. And next week, in place of Open Air, you're going to actually hear a program called Giving Thanks, a celebration of fall food and gratitude. While I'm giving some thanks over a Thanksgiving dinner, we're going to hear John Burge and his program of music and stories for Thanksgiving. Giving Thanks, a celebration of fall food and gratitude, heard next week at this time in place of Open Air. Mike and Wesla up at the Raz Room and at Alan Farley's celebration, to which I cordially invite you and ask you to RSVP at KALW.org. Here's the end of Autumn in New York, Mike and Wesla. Thanks for listening this week. It's good to live in
again.